Okay, today is another Tuesday. Yeah, Tuesday, September 26th. We are going to have 1 hour of discussion in English media. So we have appointed topic and traditional topic. And before going to that, I would like to open the discussion if you have any circumstantial and occasional issues or any interview reports. Or any other comments, suggestions? If it is so, we will take few minutes.
Ashray Bante?
Yeah. Please carry on. We also have some.
Yeah, there is no report from this end, Bante.
Thank you, Bante. I would like to ask a question. I've read in the Dhammapada that the Buddha mentioned to one of his disciples that it is in accordance with the Buddha to have a few wants.
You have what?
To have a few wants, to have some desires. And then he gives...
A few desires.
Yes, yeah. And then he gives an example of a man that was on a little island underneath his mango tree. And I would like to ask... what does he mean when he say it's in accordance with the Buddha to have a few desires when there are many, you can find many sources where he says that you have to abandon all desires?
No, that is what he wanted to attack. We are not abandoning desires. We are thinning down. We are waning off. We are reducing. More the desire reduces, more the wisdom arises. So after a certain level, even with the desire, if you have practical, pragmatic wisdom, that desire doesn't matter. But if the desire is overpowering, so much so the wisdom, rational thinking, comprehension, weakening. So today, nowadays we are dealing a sutta, is Anguttara Nikaya. It says, Raga Vepullattam. Dosa vepullatta, moha vepullatta. If you are living in a way, multiplying your desire, hatred and the ignorance, definitely you are destined to hell. But if your way of life is reducing, not getting rid of, tanukattam means diluting. That means you have to understand you are an utter source of desire, utter source of strategy of desire, and that understanding, and then we live in a way not to go to a lack of desire or absence of desire, absence of hate, absence of... This is called relativity. That is completely misunderstood among the Buddhists. They are hating desire. You have to understand the mechanism of desire so much so, you have to let that happen, but don't give fertilizer. Don't give food. Desire will be there. But you know, desire is a self-propelling thing. That is how the world system is running, but don't take responsibility. Why you worry? And you can see, even you give less desire, world is running. So you are the benefit, you are get the benefit. And not only that, you develop clear comprehension. Otherwise, you think, I am the person doing this thing, that thing, and ultimately when it is specifically, when it goes wrong, you become vehemently angry. That is the detrimental, that is the suicidal, that's the killing energy coming. But if you are normally knowing that I must have my basic needs, you can't live without basic needs. Your fight for the basic needs never unjustified. But if you are fighting for luxury, endless desire, then you are disturbing the society. Then you are trespassing the society. Then you are warming the global warming and pollution. So you must have, your living is a cost, it's a friction. But don't make an unwanted friction to the other living beings and the society. So that, what you call frugal living, or economizing, or telling enough. Little appear like rough, but it's very poetic. It's a little poetic, just to say, that's enough. Appear like someone is offering a cigarette, you may say thank you. He's offering a cigar. You say, no thanks. So that means that you are not completely against smoking or you are not taking, no, thanks enough. So when the last time I go to UK, they offered me a book known as Enough. Because for Sunday society, they don't know how to say enough. Because money making, the dopamine hormone, make again and again and going. And money for the sake of money, people have no chance to spend it. Earning. They have no chance to go to a mall, go to a picnic, go to anything, living at the house. Because that opportunity cost. If you are losing very little, so much of lost. So Achan Brahm went to African country. I don't know, he may know this thing. And he got 3 days leave. It's a top class economist. And when you go there, he was living in the balcony and he see a very poor fishing family in there. And there he is always playing with children and going once a day to the sea and get little bit of fish and eat it then leave. So this man was looking at this, that man can go twice. He never think about. So after three days contemplation, he went to the person and said, I'm very happy, I am coming from so and so, I saw you all are happy. So I come to a suggestion, if you are going twice, you get at least twice amount of the fish. And 2 days time, a few days now, you can buy a boat by the extra and you can hire people and you can be like me. And I am such a millionaire. Then he's asking, why did you come here? For a picnic. So your picnic is my whole year. Your 3 days picnic is my whole year. Because I am going only once, I am very relaxed. I am chilling with children. You three, only 3 days, how much I am relaxed. You have to work 362 days. I am daily with the family. Sea is there, boat is there, I am going only once. Is it economical theory? Is it a social theory, a political? No, everyone will say that bloody fool is lethargic. But he is giving enough time for the children. And he is not exploiting the sea, he is consuming. I can understand you are a Jew. I don't know whether I have satisfactorily answered your question. I hope I got the question.
Yes, Chief Bhante, thank you very much.
Yeah, before go to the book, anyone if he is having, we have taken about 10 minutes. Otherwise, I would like to invite Venerable Buddharakhita to start with the Artha Danda Sutta, the next verse.
Again, the Buddha is very pertinent. One who has crossed over sensual pleasures, the tie so hard to overcome in the world, who has cut off the stream without bonds, does not sorrow, does not hope. So again, I think it's quite a deep answer to your question. So we need to cross over sensual pleasures. And that means we need to master them. We need to manage them, not be a slave to sensual pleasures, but to manage them, because we all have necessities. So the bhikkhus have, we call it the four requisites. We need food, we need clothing, we need shelter, and we need medicine. So these are necessities. It's not like you can cut it off. It's not like that these are sensual pleasures. These are necessities. So as Mahathera has just said, it's about what is enough. Enough is when you have necessity enough. And then when you have more than enough, that's called surplus. So if you want to do a dana, if you want to be generous, you can only give your wealth. You can't give away your necessities. You know, so there's stories in the Vinaya of where somebody asked a monk for their underwear, their clothes. And the monk had to say, I'm sorry, I only have one set. I have my necessities, but I can't share this. Because I'm in minus, you know. So like your idea is correct, to work, ask the question, like, why, what is enough? Once you ask the right question, then you understand this sensual game very well. Most people do not distinguish between necessity, enough, and bounty, too much, you know, enough, more than enough. And then when you have more than enough, what do you do with that? Well, it's very useful to be able to share it. If you have more than enough, then you can share it. Then that's the real purpose of wealth. And you only know you're wealthy when you can share. You know, when you can share, it's like, oh yeah, I don't need this. Yeah, I'm happy to share this. Whereas if you definitely have not enough, and you can't share it, then you have to just say to somebody, I'm sorry, I only have my own bare necessities here. And it's not appropriate that I give away my own necessities. Then we're both in a bad shape. So one here has crossed over sensual pleasures. So in that way, sensual pleasure can be an indication of I have more than enough. You know, when you have stuff that you're just frolicking and messing around with, and it's like heaps, and you're just, you know, you're playing with your gold. You're just moving the little pieces from one side of the board to the other. Then that's a kind of a sensual pleasure. If you're really stuck in necessity, then you're just thinking, how do I make my next meal? How do I make my next meal? You know, what do I need to do to survive? Whereas if you're like, you know, throwing the money around, then you're probably in sensual pleasures and you have more than you need. So the tie so hard to overcome in the world. It is really hard to overcome. So this takes acute wisdom. You're going to have to develop acute wisdom to know what are my needs, what is enough, what is more than enough, and then how can I best use my wealth? Who has cut off the stream without bonds? The tie so hard to overcome in the world, who has cut off the stream without bonds, does not sorrow, does not hope. So here we go. Like when you cut off the stream, meaning the stream of suffering, the stream of rebirth, without bonds, without attachments to rebirth, one does not sorrow. So you don't miss the world because you know that the world is full of suffering, and you don't hope for heaven. You know, so this rebirth, we end the greatest suffering of all, which is rebirth. So every time the Buddha is saying aging, sickness and death, but he's also talking about birth. It's birth, aging, sickness and death. So in life, we're already born. So we tend to think that birth is a great thing, and we think that aging, sickness and death is a bad thing. But the cause of life is birth itself. And if you understand, like, not just the Buddha's teachings, but you can know for yourself, if you can remember your past lives through concentration, through meditation, you can know these kind of things. And then you can know for yourself that the real problem is rebirth itself. So what we're ultimately cutting off is the attachment to rebirth. So it's not the attachment to Coca-Cola or to Paripu or whatever it is. It's our attachment to rebirth that is the ultimate craving that we cut off. And by cutting that off, that, you know, just that I don't have that impetus to be reborn again, then I don't get the next life. You know what I mean? And then I don't get that suffering. So I'm not longing for the next life, and I'm not grieving, you know, oh, wouldn't it be great to go to heaven? Like I meet monks who want to be reborn in the time of Maitreya. They don't want rebirth to end it. They don't want to strive for enlightenment. They just want to meet Maitreya, Buddha, or something like that. You meet like a lot of religions. They have a kind of a heaven. You know, if we're good and we do good, we will be reborn in heaven. So it's a kind of an aspiration for wealth. It's an aspiration for something better. It's an aspiration to be back with Big Daddy or something like that. So it's very, very difficult to let go of that aspiration because it's very natural again. You'll find it in every human all over the world that they have these similar aspirations. So it's like hardwired into our DNA, or I don't know what, into our existence as a human being. So to cut that off, and I don't, cut off sounds very harsh, but to have the wisdom to really be not interested anymore in rebirth, to not aspire for heaven, you know, to not to understand that heaven or like wealth in daily life is just something to be used to maybe share with others, you know, to share your wealth, then that is real prosperity, you know. That's real prosperity. So I admire some of these really rich people who, you know, try to figure out ways to get rid of their wealth or give it away, you know, skillfully before their death. You know, they're not all fools. Mostly are, but not all. So look for the exceptions. Look for the outliers. There was a guy called Chuck Feeney, and he made about $7 or $8 billion on duty-free. He was one of the first guys to develop duty-free. You know, like, in the airports. The DFS, you've seen it all over the world, duty-free shopping. This guy set up duty-free shopping. He made about $8 billion, and he's still alive. He lives in San Francisco, but he's almost sold, got all that money gone. All that money gone. You know, he's been, he has his specific foundations and things that he's funding, particularly education and health. And he views it as a business. So, you know what I mean? Like, he's trying to be like a seed venture capitalist, growing all these, and it's very successful. So what I'm saying is we don't know enough, like Mahathir was saying. So if you intimately know enough, then you have a great victory over sensual desire. But you can't fall the other way either, of depleting yourself of necessity. Like, this is the thing that happens for most monks and people in the spiritual life. They get into anorexia, where they're depriving themselves of necessities, and it's emaciated and it's ugly, and it's like, oh, Jesus, that's painful. So again, like, you'll hear the Buddha talking about the naked ascetics and all these other people doing these weird things. And if you go to India today, you'll still see the same guys hanging things off their penis. And, oh my God, standing in the sun for a year or something like that, standing on one leg. You can go there. It's still the same. You think it's a story in the suttas. No, it's not. It's still going on. The extreme self-torture that people will put themselves under, and then, like, this is an escape from sensuality. No, it's not. It's just two sides of the same coin. It's all about sensuality in a weird way. So to find that enough is really wisdom, you know? Like, your enoughness will change day to day. You know, sometimes you're hungry, sometimes you're not hungry. Sometimes you're sick, sometimes you're not sick. You know, you're going to need different things at different stages of your life. It takes a lot of wisdom to have that self-awareness, to know what your necessities are, and knowing what enough is, and then knowing what's more than enough. I can let this go. So I'll just read it again. One here who has crossed over sensual pleasures, the tie so hard to overcome in the world, who has cut off the stream without bonds, does not suffer, does not sorrow, does not hope. So maybe Mahathir can tell us in Pali and Sinhalese.
Anyone who wishes to contribute? No, I will go to the Pali. I hope that the same. Gedang brumi mahogoti ajavam brumi japana. Aramanam pakappana kamapanko durachyo. The desire and the attachment I call geda. What means you get, it is a motivated, it's a flood. Ajavaka, it is carry you, taken you away. In a small water you can cross, but when the water become big, you will carry it away. Jalpanyak, and then you hold only to water. With this you are going, it is going to kill you. There's no other. And that you have to, understanding, you have to overcome it. That is the 949th number. What is your number?
When?
You are 948.
Yeah,
four numbers up and down. I don't know up or down. Just now I read 949. That means it may be wrong. That means 952. Yeah. Sorry, yeah?
Right.
Yodha kame achchatari sangang loke durachyang naso sochati najyotati najyoti jinnasotang abandano. The beings in this world, it is crossing the difficult to cross desire. And when it is cut off, is nothing to suffer, nothing to regret. So it is something like a positive thinking for the person of a gone person. Not to the, it's a sign or it's a hint for the those who are crossing the road. He says, if you can cross, there is no suffering. So regarding the Venerable's comment, it is because of your question, and we geared to the point. I thought of sharing 3 points. We have one sutta in Anguttara Nikaya called Aryavamsa Sutta. It is the lineage of the noble people, Aryavamsa. It is talking about the utility and luxury. So you must worry about the luxury. That is the where the ego is boosted and you have the motivation, and today world is, education is, and the political, legal, every system is promoting it. But they have a right. They say that the utility must be there. But what is the limit between utility and luxury is, don't know people we call commoners. Known people we call Aryans or noble people. Some people in between, they know theoretically, they know deductively, but they are on the way. So monk's life is an exemplified thing, because it is depending on the given thing. And the yogi is living here also. You can't have princely luxuries. You may have, you can get the normal utility. But we are never happy. We always need some luxury, some favoritism. So luxury and utility is the term Venerable Jnananda used. That is 1 point. Second thing is, he is talking about that we have 4 inevitable suffering, birth, old age, sickness and death. We know sicknesses, weaknesses and death, we know it's negative. But we have a wrong concept. Birth is positive. That's why we have birthday parties. But by the time you are learning, you are already born. So this is the paradox the Buddha had. In the first utterance, he says, Aneka Jati Sansaran Sandha Visangani Bisa. In my aeons of time, I was searching about the root cause, but I failed. This time I got hold of the house builder. I destroyed his roofs and everything. And no more, hey guy, you can't make houses for me. So commentators, they say, it is about understanding about the ignorance. No one can see the beginning of the ignorance. Only one can see the beginning of the desire. So therefore, when the Buddha says he was 35 years, he can't see the birth. He can't see, I experienced the birth. By that time, 35 years gone. So the commentators, not the commentators, meditation master says the beginning of the breath, beginning of the in-breath, beginning of the out-breath, beginning of the left leg, beginning of the right leg, beginning of the desire, beginning of the hatred, beginning of the no desire, no hatred, and beginning of the sleepiness, and beginning of the wakefulness. For that only, you have to get hold one object. At the beginning, you see only the tip of the iceberg. You never see the object, the appearing part or disappearing part. And after see the breath, in-breath, out-breath, in-breath, out-breath. Whenever the breath becomes face-to-face, Upanishad Sayadaw says, don't try till, but once you know, now I can see the breath, maybe 10 more breaths. That kind of a conveyor. Then see the beginning of the breath. You know next breath. You are not trying to see the breath. You see from where does it come. Then your sensitivity is going little further and see earlier you can't see because you are not prepared. Now you go prepared, you can see. And that trend will be furtherance if you see the third appearance of the breath, fourth appearance of the breath. Then sensitivity go deep, 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 deep down. That means not on the tip of the iceberg, your sensitivity goes in the bell-shaped curve. And there you find the beginning is a concept or a reality. Am I really see the beginning? Oh, I think. And that knowledge reflect to the end of the breath. That is, you have to nothing to do. It's an endowment. If you know the beginning of the breath, your sensitivity is very sharp. You know, your breath is too late, that means. You have to see the beginning part of the breath. So it is usually, you can put in a graph, this is the x-axis, y-axis. At the beginning, if you are a rough person, you see only the tip of the iceberg. Make sure you can see breath continuously. Okay, that is your first task. And then you see the beginning. Then ultimately this is your sensitivity line. Slowly, slowly goes down. And you can see this one, then you can hopeful this one. Likewise, when it go there, it's flat off. There you are not there. You are already enlightened. This is, you are utterly rough. And slowly when you go there, same thing reflect when it is disappearing. Exactly the same. When you see the beginning and you are endowed, you have the capacity, you have the potential to see the end. And now you are aiming to the still further, the beginning. Because that appears like auspicious. You appear like meditation. It appears like a task. But this is the sickening, old age and the death. Then with the help of this beginning part, your mind become very sharp. You never let the breath to disappear, in-breath to disappear and out-breath happen. You see the disappearance of the in-breath, disappearance of out-breath. Out of that, Mahasi system very clearly says, disappearance of the out-breath is more prolonged. You can thin slice the time, not the rising part, but the falling part. So there you see the old age, sickness and the death. But the sharpening of your faculties happen here. So this is the Newtonian physics. This is how Einstein physics is happening now. From the materiality, they slowly goes into the energies. They goes into the electronic fields rather than matter. So Jnanarama used to say, how things appear like from nothing and how things disappear into nothing. Adravyam dravyamavima sa dravyam adravyamavima. So this is, people think, mystics. They say this is scientific because this has the three dimension. But when it come here, it is liquidified, ultimately appear like gases. And this is also the same. So this part is a rehearsal for the death. You are taking the death day by day, go, but you are referring to the death of a in-breath. But the death of the out-breath is more prominent. There's a one guy in America, he's 103 years old. Still he can write computers. He says, I'm a happy fellow because I don't know my figures, biodata. My age, my blood pressure, my sugar, I have given that to the doctor. I just see the breath. A long essay. The last he says, see the end of the out-breath. That's the secret. But that is normally unauspicious. But to sharpen your faculties, you have to see the beginning of the in-breath, the out-breath, and see how it's come to the rubbing, rushing breath into the nostril, and see the disappearance. Materiality dissolves into the immaterial. Your egotistic idea disappears. Because this part is unknown, that we have the fear of unknown. You have to arm guard, you have to train yourself, you have to be prepared. You see sharpening happen in the beginning part and the same thing reflect in the disappearance part. So that is nothing to worry. That's an endowment. As far as you know the subtle beginning of the breath and the subtle beginning of the desire, subtle beginning of the hatred, you can nip it at the bud level. It is not a big issue. But when it comes to the middle, even with the army, with the automatic weapons, you can't stop it. So today, people are utterly fooled. They are too late. And now they are fighting countries and people and against the climate and kind of thing. But you see, beginning, everyone is innocent. But they have no technique to see the beginning, that means appamada, the vigilance, diligence. But now, Buddha invented and expressed very well in these books. But the Western people now see how people, those who are not worried about the gross things and worrying about the subtle thing, they are not talking about the world peace. They are not talking about the climatological, the warming up. Because they know their mind is pure. And instead they say, they are the people make the cooling of the earth. They are the people make the negative to the pollution. They are unshaken. They always look the breath, see the in-breath with these tools, same thing reflect in the out-breath, the disappearance of the breath, and that is one epithet. Then it goes to the raga, dosa, moha, and the desire, hatred and kind of thing. Ultimately, Lokuhamdra used to say, if you have done enough, the others can borrow your knowledge. It's contagious. You give a silent sermon to the others because he is living in such a way, using only the utility and always happy to share it. But he is not missionary. He has no mission as such. So if someone comes, we are ready to share. But he has done it for years. But that knowledge is not easy to transfer to the other person because they are looking at the tip of the iceberg. And that is also good. That's a starting point. So, I put the numbering. This is number one. This is number two. This is number three. So, our formula is 1, 2, 3. But when you give in the prize givings, you have a stage like this. First person is here, second person is here, third person is here. And you put the first prize and the second prize and the third prize like. But if the chronological point of view, first is here, second is here, third is here. And they are beginners are in the second. Buddha's instruction is to go to the second, to the one. And endowment what you get is the third. 2, 1, 3. So 1, 2, 3 formula will be changed into chronological order. 2 and 3, and that is not lenient way of theory, educationists are accepting. But they are fool. Their education is not for liberation. Their education is not to see the beginning. They are talking about nonsense. They are talking about already arisen thing. Buddha also's first utterance was the same. I saw the beginning. Not that it was birth, he experienced the birth. No, he says, I see the beginning of the breath. And that is the deductive knowledge. If the breath is like that, birth also like that. If the breath is like that, desire also like that. If the breath is like that, lack of desire also like that. So you are taking one example and slowly diversifying for everything. That's the second point after your talk I jotted down. And let me have the third one and then finish it for the openness of the discussion. The third one is, as you progress in meditation, you feel, if you are sharp enough, your desire is reducing, but it is painfully slow. You do not know how to facilitate it. You consider it as losing something. You feel become too much old. No one can entertain you because everything is, contentment is there, whether you lose or gain. So other people come and phrase, you blame, no harm. So therefore, because our mind is always motivated theory, motivational theory, but when the maturity happens, you cannot be motivated. Not that you are against anything, because your maturity coming, therefore your desire is reducing. But you can't understand it. It's a task of the teacher at the beginning. So if you are not with the meditated people, if you are not a meditated atmosphere, if you do not know how to put things into the clear comprehension and orderly manner, you may be progressing, but you may be regretting. Because you feel like your desires are reducing. Other people also will say that you are not type party-going type, you are not a picnic-going type. And kind of thing. So therefore, very difficult because other people are with the motivational, they are with the desire. So when you are living with others, if the other people also meditators, if the other people also have a meditation center atmosphere, and you have the correct perspective of looking at things, we are totally progressing. We are totally progressing, but still we regret. Because ego is losing, desire is losing, dramatic nature is losing, multicolored world is losing, and go-go show is losing, but contentment-wise, satisfaction, self-satisfaction-wise, you are not depending on any person, any other places, any other time. Here and now, I think we are the best human beings on the earth for the time being. That's all I have to say. Any British ideas or American? Because they are thinking they are great people.
Thank you, Swaminand, sir.
Great
Thank
Britain,
you,
yes.
Bhante.
Yeah.
So I was just listening to Swaminand, sir. You're talking about the breath as it's arising, as it comes to its climax, and then as it is disappearing. And I thought that in a different way, I was relating this to, for me, I think for everybody, the self is the thing that we cling to the most. It's what creates, you know, what we are continually thinking of ourself and having ideas about ourself in relationship to the world. And I notice that when I'm meditating, when there is mindfulness of the breath or mindfulness of walking happening, that as there is a relaxing of the self view, there's more just an experience of the mind and the activity coming together as a single experience happening. And that at that point, there's no self that's generating or thinking or experiencing. It's just an experience of body and mind happening. So I'm thinking that in mindfulness, as there's mindfulness and the mindfulness becomes more prominent, there's less of a self, which seems to be the thing that is the thing that creates desire and grasping. And when the body and mind become very relaxed and come into a unity, then there's not a self that's prominent, and everything is just effortless. So somehow it seems that lately there's this experience of this in walking mindfully. This is what is the experience. This is what arises, is this effortlessness and lack of self, this relaxed, effortless nature, and the body and mind together arising in a without separation. And I don't notice an end to anything. I don't notice an end to any experience. It just seems more like an activity happening without any self selfless activity. So somehow that seems to relate to the breath and how we might have this experience of being able to see the end of the breath, or being at a lower level where it's not a coarse activity. So I don't know. I guess it's a question. How does that relate the experience that I'm speaking of in walking.
It's stirring me. In walking, very easily you can explain, even you can make a video clip. There's one boy in Sydney, he's 6 years old, and he's a very short fellow, black fellow. He's not higher than the mic even, but he's conducting the whole retreat, giving instructions like. So he used to say, when I'm walking, I feel the area which is not touching the ground. Again and again he's telling. Then I told, the best thing is to run in a muddy place and come and sit, keep your leg on a white paper. There you can see where the mud is touching and which is not. Then he put an outline and says, Bhante, this the arch area, and in between this, the ball and the fingertips, there are areas I can really feel, I don't feel. Then I say, sir, you are a kind of a genius fellow. And make a photo, make a 3 minutes video with the help of his father, and he put the two footprints and put it. Then I ask, darling, what about the breath? Can you feel the untouchable areas? No, Bhante, that is not available in the breath. Only in the walking. Then I told, why don't you try? Then he put the bell-shaped curve. And he is talking half single, half English. And with the help of the father, he says, this area is touchable, but this area is untouchable. And then with that knowledge, if you go there, leading to the untouching areas. So this area is not me. This is the me. And when it's going slowly, he can't explain, he's dissolving himself. So that is the relationship between the walking and sitting. And Venerable Sariputta used to say, when you are walking, how the weight changing from the left leg to the right leg? It's from 62 kilos. One leg is losing, other leg is gaining. There he says, Pachapure Sanyi. You must have forefront, rear and front knowledge. How the change happened? There is no place. Just like a relay race, the person is passing the baton. If the baton fallen, lead will be dropped. So they have to pass the baton very smoothly. It is so sharply happening in our karmic forces. When the one leg to the other changing, we hardly feel the changeover period. It is the fear of unknown. It's the fear of the freedom. That area is completely free. It's happening something you don't know, but it's very crucial for left leg to right leg. The Buddha gave it as a cartwheel. The cartwheel, one spoke to the other one, is changing through the periphery. When you are walking like that, one spoke to the other is changing, but weight is going through the periphery. And this hub is your hip bone, and top of one is the top of the head, and the heel is the leg. And when leg is going, the other leg is taking in between, this area shifting the weight. The thickest point to the thinnest point. And when the thin point is lifting, the other thickest point is taking the weight. From the heel to the toes. And that is given in the... We have prepared 3 films, 3 videos. One thing is in English. How the cartwheel is working. And how your leg is thin. When you see Olympic runner, you can see how he is managing the legs. And he is managing about the upper toes, body. But the legs are working. The Buddha says it's like a cartwheel. So therefore, Pachapure Sanyi, when you are doing something, of course mindfulness is here and now. But ultimately it is spreading slowly to the fore and front, the rear. How the left leg lost the energy, lost the power line, and then shifting to the right leg. And if you have a wound in your leg, sometimes twisting, we call ulukvenoa, and leg sometimes go twist, and they're very difficult for you to walk with that leg. The other leg is comfortable. So when you are keeping, you feel painful. But there you can see how the weight is shifting. Or if you have a thorn, or if you have a wound, you avoid in that place. There how the weight is lifting, weight is shifting. So that part is the what physics can't understand. That's what the quantum physics try to understand, but I don't think they have given a successful theory, because Newtonian physics is on the tip of the iceberg. That itself is enough to go to Moon. That itself is enough to go to the Saturn. But still you have not gone in. Outside is there. Extrovert knowledge is there. But inward, how the changing from one to the other, therefore it is called, you have to understand thin slicing of time, how the weight shifting. And it is often happening with karmic forces rather than me. I think I am walking. But I may walk only if the heel is working, and even if you are mindful. But how the weight shifting happen, and when it's happening, how the balance is taking place, how the power line is directly for the atlas, this thing. So soon, when I was in New Zealand, that house was, that room was, belongs to the owner's mother. She is Buddhist. And there was a skeleton in the book that immediately I thought of taking a traces, the skeleton. And then I gave someone, can you please make a movie so that to assimilate the walking person and the rotating wheel. And then we put some boys and girls and imposed into the rotating wheel. And so when you are walking, upper part is directly just like a puppet. This thing is changing. And when it's happening, how the periphery is shifting the energy to the one to the other. And we are acrobats. Jnanarama used to say, we are only walking with one leg. We don't know. And we are running. We play football. We put hop, step and jump. Pole vault. How the legs are working? And two-legged, we were four-legged. 20 million years ago, we were four-legged. And then only we came to two-legged. And the eye came upper. Otherwise, nose is the one it was earlier. Now, eye. Your eye is the main thing. And how the legs are walking. And how much back pain people. How much the problem in the knees. If you are offering your skeleton to the medical faculty, most wanted part is the kneecap. So much of demand. Because people, they don't care. Who panditasaya says Sri Lankans are very always apply oil to the head. They don't care the leg. They are walking in the water and they are sneezing all the time using the cement floor. They never use cement floor. They always advise you to wear shoes, very cheap. And use wooden parquet. They never touch the flat ground or cement. They call bilamia. Bilamia means British soil. Bilam means British. Mia means soil. This is British soil, imported soil. Nowadays a lot of concrete buildings are happening. But that is how it happened. In Sri Lanka also, that we are walking in the sandy land, that's the biggest reflexology massage you have. But if we are wearing shoes and we are using in the flat surfaces, massage is not so good. That is the answer for the walking meditation. British. No, you are not happy to share with you. You are so stingy.
It's just early days for me. I've just been here just over a week. I didn't really know hardly anything when I arrived, and I'm just learning things as I go along. So at the same time as learning things, I'm sort of coming through with revelations in my head about personal things and about my life and up until now. And I'm the sort of person that likes to get things in order in my head before I speak. I don't want to speak too soon sometimes. I just feel a bit foolish. So I just sort of listening to everything that's being said. And it's great information. And I'm just sort of wanting to come at some point to you know, speak to yourself or one of the monks to be able to sort of give my opinion on myself, really, and where I go from here, because I do feel that this is a bit of a turning point in my life up to now. I've been a particular way, and I've achieved what I wanted to achieve, thinking that by now I would be happy and everything would be rosy in life and that, because that's what I aim to achieve. And I've got there and found dissatisfaction, really. And so through other circumstances, I'm here. But I do feel that it's a bit of a bottleneck where it's about to open, and a lot's going to change for me. So I'm just trying to work out how that change is going to be for me and how to manage that.
Can your happiness will be contagious to the other British people, or is it only to you British?
I think, I suppose I've been quite selfish in that way, that what I've been doing for the last 60 years, if you like, is to improve my own life and my family's life, which is what I thought was the right thing to do, with all good intentions. And then when you actually get to that point, and I've actually, you know, we talked about excess, and I've got to that point with excess, and so now I'm looking at how I can possibly redistribute that, and the best way.
So you think that your progress will be more depending on the meditation-wise mature people or beginners? Sharing with beginners will give you a good hiatus, or association with the very mature people, which one you prefer?
I suppose a little bit of both, because I'm a beginner myself. If I go with and continue trying to speak with people who are teachers, if you like, and I've spoken to Dhammaloka a few times, so that if I get that information, that will help me on the other end of beginners. So although I'm a beginner, I think there would be a lot of benefit for more people at the beginning stage.
So you will lose your beginner's characters when you become mature with associating so much of mature people.
Well, yeah.
So you have to, beginners once have the vocabulary, so that easy to communicate with non-believers, non-practitioners, non-mindful people, because you are very fresh from that society.
Yes.
So now you are slowly, slowly gaining, and kind of a reconfiguration is happening. So at that time, your vocabulary is very, how do you call, very crispy, very easy to understand. But our Sri Lankan tradition says, don't teach anyone, mind your own business, go to the forest and leave. So at the beginning, I was so vehemently with that. I thought, don't teach others because you are not enlightened. Till you're enlightened, don't do it. But when I started the mindful school, it happened, I proposed myself. And when I go there, when I'm learning, teaching with and working with the very young people, and murderers, and drug addicts, and terminal cancer patients, I have to use certain vocabulary very, very lay, not very mature, very not a technical jargon.
Yeah.
And they are, we have to entertain them. No harm, you also can do. I am also a beginner. You also can do, because you have not done any mistake, irrevertible. And you have a special meaning, because otherwise you are cursing yourself. I am a drug addict, so I am a criminal, I am a terminal patient. No. So that is the how the sharing give so much of reinforcement, galvanizing effect. And not you are going to get the degrees or fame, gain kind of thing, but the touch, the communication, that the how do you call, the adrenaline communication, very sharp.
Well, I suppose that's the initial way, really, because I didn't really, as I said, not know much about. I knew a little bit about meditation, but not about the mindfulness side and how it, in such a short space of time, is helping me with why I came, which was my psoriasis. But it's opened up other things for me now. So I can see a lot more benefit than just trying to clear up my psoriasis. And so because this is completely new to me, and Tim sort of helped me with a book yesterday, because I've read some of the books that you have here, and I'm gleaning bits of information from it and snippets, but some of it I find hard to read. Whereas the book that I've halfway through now, with John Kabat-Zinn, is really sort of hitting the nail on the head for me and understanding. And I'm thinking that I'm surprised a lot of other people, certainly in the UK, in the environment that I'm in, don't know this and don't see this. So I think there's a place for that.
So you will be the mediator.
Somewhere along those lines. And
you're qualified because you already started and you are a beginner. You have mistakes. That is your qualification.
Okay.
You must express it.
I'm glad you've got that confidence in me, but I'm not sure where, you know, what stage I'm at personally, because I'm still struggling.
That stage is the one corrupting you. You are a no one. You are a beginner.
Yeah.
Ready to do any mistakes, but not doing for the mistake for the sake of doing mistakes.
Yeah.
You are ready to accept. Among the beginners, the middle and the elderly people, it says, this much I did and so much it's a mistake. Please forgive me, because I wish to progress. So therefore that we are progressing like anything, but we can't measure it. We are always underestimating. We are always, specifically yogis, all the interview reports are negative. They never write what is positive. Always wish to ask questions. End of the report is a question. So I have to endow them, I have to enshrine them, enthrone them, telling, no, you are already, flower already bloomed. It's smelling, good smell and beautiful. But you don't know. With other people always killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, lying, slandering. And you see, we are minding our own business. They appear like selfish, but you must have the glad mind. You must try to find a reason to be glad under any circumstances. That's what the Pollyanna is teaching us. Have you read Pollyanna?
No. I've heard of it, though.
You are too old.
Okay, I am.
German? No comment? So then we can go to the next stanza. If there are no other comments, please.
Dry up what pertains to the past. Let there be nothing afterward. If you do not grasp in the middle, you will live in peace. So dry up what pertains to the past is to, you know, Godwin was always teaching me that the past, there is no past, there's only present moment thoughts about the past. You see, so how we can dry up the past immediately, if you think about that sentence. There is no past. There's only present moment thoughts about the past. And that was very helpful to me in understanding that, for instance, if thoughts are arising in my head, if emotions are arising in my head, then I don't have to act on them. And this was really freeing. Immediately, I don't have to do what my thinking is saying. You know, do this, do that. Okay, no, I don't have to do it. I can just know that I'm thinking I need to do this. I need to do that. So thoughts about the past are not actually the past. They're just actually present moment thoughts about the past. And if you know anything about memory and memory studies, the past, as far as memory is concerned, is constantly malleable and changing. You know, so it can be very interesting now in court where, you know, somebody will come in and they're a witness to an accident and they say, I saw this, I saw that, I saw the other. And then the next thing they show the CCTV and it was a completely different story. So what are we to believe? You know, what are we to believe? Are we to believe that the past was the CCTV, or are we to believe what we remember the past to be? So we need to be very careful in what we think is the past, and just know that, that I'm thinking about the past. So a lot of the time, when I'm thinking about the past, it's because of sorrow, the previous sentence from the previous verse. Because of sorrow, I think about the past. So there's a kind of always a sense of regret. And in the future, you know, you'll hear young children, they're always thinking about the future. It's a kind of an excitement and an anxiety, and what will I be when I grow up? There's an anxiety and an excitement in that. And so that's the future. The future is do not hope. The Buddha says don't hope about the future. Because the future, when we think about the future, it's all hope. When we think about the past, it's sort of regret and sorrow. So when we dry up the past, what we're doing is just realizing I'm thinking about the past actually in the present moment. My present moment thing. So often when I think about the past, I'm thinking, what am I worried about? You know, what am I sad about? Where's this feeling of loss? Because I'm thinking about the past. And the same with the future. I get all into plan. You know, like, oh, it'd be great to do this. And it's like, what am I anxious about in the present moment? You know what I mean? Like, it's really helpful if you can kind of use the information of thinking about the past, thinking about the future as an indication of your present state of mind and underlining concerns and emotional states. So, yeah, so dry up what pertains to the past. Let there be nothing afterward. So again, let there be nothing afterwards means don't go into the future either. So you know, you're sort of talking about being 60 or something, and I have some regrets about the past, but I'm going to change the future. You know what I mean? Like, it's like he's telling you don't do either of those things. You know, if you know what I mean, just be informed, get into the present, be present. Don't be past, don't be future, be present. And if you do not grasp, if you don't grasp in the middle, you will live in the peace. So if you're in the present moment and you're not grasping, then you're in peace. So don't be grasping, if you want, don't be grasping the past, don't be grasping the future, don't be grasping the present, and you're in peace. Right? So I hope you can appreciate that verse. Matero, can you tell us what it says in Sinhalese
this
Pali?
This thing appear in the Dhammapada is a complete different story. I mean, that story will give a kind of a way you can use, put into the world. When King Pasenadi Kosala had the civil rights in some areas, some civil situation. He got an army major and asked, take the people and go there and settle down. And more than expected, he settled down very quickly. King told it will be lingering and difficult, but he got it. Then king gave 7 days of kingsly luxury for him. You can use whatever the luxury in the palace and for the 7 days. And all the band and the damsels and the horses, the elephants and kind of thing. So he was happening and he got the one damsel with anorexia. Later only I detect that's anorexia. She was dancing without eating. Because she can't move. And the 7th day, he go to the park with the something to drink and the same age children, I mean, boys and the girlfriends and kind of thing, put up the stage, music is running. And he also is really entertaining. And she was dancing like anything and collapsed and died on on the stage. And they thought it's a part and parcel of the drama. When we were there, open night, open mouth, dead. And he got a shock. And luckily, when he is coming to the garden or to the, how do you call it, picnic, the Buddha was going on Pindapatha. And he was in full of adoration on the elephants and the drum beating and frodi swept and all the kind of thing. Buddha is going, but he gave up just to pay respect to the Buddha. Because Buddha is just going, looking down, and the Buddha saw that particular person on the top of the elephant, royal elephant, gave respect. And then he went there and he found to get rid of his suffering, there's no one. And tomorrow he is going to lose all the royalist facilities, and his beloved damsel died. And everyone tried to console. No, he ran to the Buddha. And after seeing him riding the horse, the Buddha gave a very hint to the Ananda. Today he will die, he will get enlightened before the death. So it appeared like something very bizarre. Cannot happen, because he is a kingly person now, going on the picnic. And Buddha told, he will get enlightened and he will die today. And he came running to the Buddha and told Bhante, this is what happened, it is such a catastrophic end. So I can't. How can I make up my mind? He says, yam pubbetam visosehi. Whatever the past, just write off. Pachyate mahu kinchanam. Don't dream about the past. Main thing is, when you give up past and the future, your tendency is to hold the present. That is what you call Advaita Vedanta. That is the point India is now. Even the Buddhists can't understand, because they are appreciating the middle path. By giving up the Kama Sukallikana Yoga, Atta Kilmatana Yoga, self-indulgence and the mortification, they hold into the middle path. And they think they are ascetics. They think they are practicing people, because the Buddha says, don't hold into the present. Then you are liberated. That particular person, with the respect to the Buddha, he managed in the one very thought moment to forget about the past 7 days and not to worry about the future, as he tried to mention. Whenever, whoever think about the past, it's a regret. Whenever think about the future, it's an excitement. It is a truth. For example, when you are sitting, and if your mind is going to the past, you can have truths. You are in the past, you are in regret, you are not in the present moment. You can verify when you are still in the dreaming in the past and regretting about the past. You can see you are in the past, not in the present moment, in the awareness, and regret is the backdrop of your mind. When the future daydreaming happens, always an excitement. You are not in the present and you lost your mindfulness. So these things cannot be verified when there is no past and the future. You have to entertain the past, you have to entertain the future, and understand they are also teaching you. When you are in the past, you cannot be in the future and the present. And you have to be in the past. I mean, you are drifted into the past, and inferentially you have to understand you verily knows you are not mindful. And you verily knows you are regretting. So they are noble truths. So likewise, 6 points in Jnanarama found in the book of discrimination. Atitanudhavananchittam vikopanupaitam samadhisa paripanto. Anagata patikankananchittam vikampitam samadhisa paripanto. If you have go future, past, regret, disturbance for your one-pointedness here. If you are in the future, excitement, disturbance to the present moment. So you have to understand, not by book, not by inferential knowledge. You have to let that eccentricism happen. Don't consider it as a crime. Don't consider it as a mistake. Because there are some truths. Then your tendency is to hold into the present. In that particular moment, the Buddha told, don't hold into the present. Today, all ascetics on the earth, all religious masters, they are holding into the present. And present itself is, just like the past and the future, mental proliferation. So when Dhammavihari went to the Balangoda and gave the mindfulness, and the Muslim girl came after that, Bande, I hope I came to the present moment. But there is no such thing as present moment. It's also with respect to the past and future, on the present happen. So that is the point where your ego is resting now. So Advaita Vedanta, Bhikkhu Bodhi, tried his best. Don't carry it away by the Advaita Vedanta, because they say forgetting about the past and the future, self-indulgence and the self-mortification. And appreciating the present, telling it is the Brahma, it is soul. And Brahma has two modes, Nirguna and Suguna. Nirguna means no character, no example, no, nothing can be depicted. That is the supreme. That is existing or not. Other one is Brahma with characters, epithets, examples. That is what we are having the statues and paying and respect and everything. That is childish game. Nirguna Vijnana, the Buddha says, Anidassana Vijnana. Anidassana Vijnana means it is there, it is not held in the past, future, even the present. That is very, very difficult to comprehend in the rational mind. So this tensa is the, what the Buddha explained. And immediately got the point, because he was in utter eccentric situation. And soon after that he died. So therefore this stanza I never expected to happen in the Sutta Nipata. And we have Dhammapada story, how he became appointed king, 7 days, and the damsel is dying, open eyed and open mouth, and he can't. Because she tried 7 days to satisfy him, but then died on the stage. Only the Buddha, he says, forget about the past, don't worry about the future, please don't hold to the present moment. So that is what in Nilambe, God been trying his best, but I was very poor in understanding. If you are giving the past and the future, you have to have something, a pivotal point to rest upon, not descend at that thing. The Buddha says, when you come closer to the pivotal point, you see how much a fool you are. You understand your foolishness. Because so far you have to give the dramatic thing, your children, to the parents and to myself. And whenever something happens, we regret. Ultimately, we have no chance to come back to the seesaw pivotal point. That is center point. When you come, he says pivotal point is avijja. Avijja is resting upon vijja. Your understanding, your ignorance is the knowledge. That is the wisdom. So we think avijja and vijja is polar apart. No. They are resting one upon the other. Vijja is resting upon avijja. Avijja upon that the pole is there. In the pole only you have the ups and downs. So you have to come middle, but don't hold it to that. Immediately you have to see, what a fool am I. So that is why people do not like to meditate. But they understand, they see through them, what a fool. So far I was accumulating, helping others and doing creative things and this and that. Only extrovert, only in materiality. So much so you are a bullock cart, a bull in the bullock cart. Keeping the whole weight of the family and karume kalugunu peratuva bandagena me jeevanagama api yanawa. So all the bloody fools pulling the cart, so proud. Because I am the only member in the family earning. I am the only man in the nation. I am the hero. So what? So therefore, don't worry about the past, future. But the main thing is, don't worry about the, don't take the prime present moment as into grant. Then who is practicing? What is practicing? Where are we going? As far as you know, you are a fool. So whenever you do not know, the gods and the Brahma pay respect. Namote purisajanya, namote purisuttama, yasate nabi janampi, yampinisai jayati. God and the Brahma says, I pay respect to this, the hybrid person, true person, because he don't know why he is meditating. As far as you know you are meditating, ego is there, goal is there, foolishness is measured. Sometimes you will be lost. Fear of freedom, fear of unknown. And that is something comprehensible, something behind the screen. You can understand, that is what we call the progress. That is, we feel it, but it happens very slowly, but hardly we facilitate it. We only facilitate things with examples, things with the reflection, things with something you can see. Okay, it is time up for now. Thank you very much for the participation. Sukhi Huntu Kamami Kamitabhang.